The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today, we'll talk about tips for off-site stays at Disney World. That's coming up on this episode 130 of WW Prep to Go. Hello and welcome to WW Prep to Go, where we talk strategy and ideas for people planning their Disney World trips. I am your host, Shannon Albert from WDWPrepSchool.com. Thank you for being here for episode 130. I have for you today information on staying off-site at Disney World. However, as I mentioned in a previous episode, I don't consider myself an expert on that because I've done it once and it didn't necessarily go as planned. So what I have for you today is a conversation I had with Heather, who is my right-hand lady and has been for, it's coming up on 2 years this fall. And she helps me keep everything running smooth. But she also is a pro on staying off-site because that is what her family chooses to do for most of their trips. So in just a second, I will have that conversation for you. Before we do that, the best way to keep in contact other than email is through social media, and you can do that on Twitter, Pinterest, Facebook page, Instagram, Snapchat, all the things. I hope that new social media networks don't keep being invented because I have to join them all. I think they're all so much fun, and feel free to connect there. I would love to chat with you. So I do want to play for you the conversation I had with Heather with offsite tips. I think it's something a lot of people should consider for their trips, and I was kind of reluctant to do it for a long time, but now I kind of see the appeal. After our conversation, I will have a quick tip of the day before we wrap up this episode. So without any further delay, here is my conversation with Heather. Welcome to the podcast, Heather.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I love having you on here. So I wanted to have you on today because I had my first offsite trip in June, as you know, and you came for part of it, and and you have a lot more experience with staying offsite than I do. So I thought it would be a good time for us to chat about this. A lot of people after that trip were asking me for tips on offsite stays, and I didn't feel like mine went as well as it should. So I'm not in a position to give tips, but you've stayed offsite a lot, haven't you?
Yes, we have several times.
And why have you, like, I mostly stay on site for my own reasons, but why have you chosen to stay off site for a lot of your trips?
We decided to go off site once our kids got, you know, bigger, and the thought of them sharing a bed was no longer appealing to them. And then we also liked to do longer trips. So to get the most bang for our buck, to be able to stay longer, off-site just made more sense than upgrading to maybe a more expensive on-site choice, which would have shortened our trip length.
Yeah. And I think those are good, like, situations where people might consider off-site, which I think we'll get into a little bit more as we go through this. We have kids kind of in the same age range, like teenagers, college age, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because we stay on site most of the time with kids that age for our own reasons. But, you know, we have different approaches. We don't want our kids to have to share a bed either, but we also like them to have the freedom to travel on site, you know,
good point.
Easily. So it kind of depends on what your sort of important criteria are there. But I think we might start doing offsite just because that bed thing is a big one. We could do a whole subject of like how to go to Disney World with adult sized children. But for now, let's just talk about offsite stuff. So when staying offsite, there's lots of different things to consider that you might not have to onsite. Of course, the biggest one being where you're going to stay. So I know you have lots of information about that. So what are some of the criteria to keep in mind if you're choosing an offsite location?
There's lots of different things. There's lots and lots of different neighborhoods that are around Disney World. So sometimes that can be a little intimidating when you start diving in to look, because a lot of the listings are listed by the area. So it's important probably to do some research, figure out which neighborhoods are closest or which neighborhoods are going to have the amenities that you want. And then, of course, size is a big component of that as well. What size place you need, those kinds of things.
Yeah, there's lots of different criteria. Okay, so let's talk about the size of the location you choose. What kind of sizes are usually available, and what can you expect, like, amenity-wise for those locations?
Okay, so you'll have condos, townhomes, and then private houses are your three main options. So your condos are usually 2 to 3 bedrooms. A lot of the neighborhoods will have areas where you'll have, like, it'll be like a gated community. You'll have condo options with your 2 to 3 bedrooms. You'll have townhomes that usually have 3 bedrooms. And then the private houses, we usually run 4, 5, 6, and even more bedrooms.
And I've heard you talk about I think when people are searching, they often are looking for the exact number of bedrooms that they need for their family. But you've actually talked about getting an even bigger house to get more options with it.
Correct. Ironically, there's a lot more homes that are 6 bedrooms, 5 bedrooms than there are 4 bedrooms. So if you are looking for a pool, you're almost always have to go for, like, a full size pool. You almost always have to go with the house that's at least 4 bedrooms, but the prices might be the same for a home that has 5 or 6 bedrooms, or even a little bit less, because there's not as many 4 bedrooms out there than there are the 5, 6 bedroom options. So don't be afraid to look bigger.
Yeah, I think that's a good takeaway from this part of our conversation, is be open-minded to different sizes, even if it's way bigger than what you actually need, because you might get more for not that much different price.
Correct.
So that might be a good idea. And then, so the next thing, when choosing a place, you have to decide where you're going to stay, like, relative to Disney World, where you're going to stay. So what are your thoughts on choosing a location?
I like to choose by neighborhood, like I said. I like to stay in neighborhoods that are closest to Disney World. Some people like to go for things that are a little bit maybe less expensive and go a little bit further out. The number of homes that are available does make the prices pretty comparable between the two. You don't pay that much more for getting a little bit closer to the parks. I like options and websites that you can use that let you narrow your searches down by neighborhood, not just by houses. So things like VRBO do that, HomeAway do that. Some of the big neighborhoods, like Windsor Hills, they even have their own private website that has available houses to rent on there. So you know you're only looking at houses that are in that neighborhood.
So VRBO and HomeAway and things like that are sites that have lots of listings that you can search.
Correct.
That you can narrow down. But then Windsor Hills is a specific neighborhood that you like.
Correct.
And they have their own website where you can narrow down within that community.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Sorry.
All right. Well, I'm just, since it's relatively new to me, I'm just trying to make sure I understand. And then I think that you have mentioned to me that you have a link on the DIB site that you like to use. It's a map.
Yes, absolutely. It's fantastic. It lists all the different neighborhoods. It's got the parks in there, so you can see as you're searching what neighborhoods you might be interested in, and you can narrow it down that way.
So if I were wanting to stay offsite, I could go there, narrow it down, and then if I wanted to, I could take those neighborhoods that I have kind of narrowed it down to and then look for specific websites for those, maybe?
Yes, for specific websites, maybe. Some of them do, like I mentioned, Windsor Hills. I think Emerald Island is another neighborhood that does the same thing. But even within the giant websites of VRBO and HomeAway, you can narrow it down to neighborhoods within those as well. So you can get to just those neighborhoods.
Okay. And I will include a link to that map that you like using, just in case other people want to use it as well. Okay, so after narrowing it down to where you want to stay, what are some things to keep in mind as you are thinking about booking?
I like to do a lot of research, probably go a little overboard with it, but I would rather be prepared than have a problem. Some things to keep in mind is that it's almost always cheaper to book directly from the owner than it is to book with a management company. And ideally, whatever you rent is going to have a management company. And oftentimes, you're going to see that house listed in multiple places. You might see it listed on a site like VRBO. You might see it listed on a site like Windsor Hills Rent. You might see it listed on a management company's website. And the price is going to vary between all those different locations. But whenever possible, if you can just communicate directly with the owner and do your booking through them, you're going to have a much lower cost because that owner is not going to have to be paying any commission fees to other websites for the booking.
Okay. So when you narrow it down, look for other places that you could book it probably or maybe for a lower price.
Correct.
Okay. That's a very good tip. And what else to keep in mind after you narrow it down?
So other things to keep in mind, you can do, if you're worried about, especially if you've never booked a private house through an individual or management company before, it can be a little nerve-wracking because you don't have maybe the comfort that you would have when you're booking a hotel. So you can do a little research on your own. You can ask for referrals. You can double check to make sure that the property owner is current on their taxes. You can check Zillow. You can check to make sure the house isn't put up for sale because that would not be a good thing to find out that the house that you rented was sold. So those are all things that I would advise people to do, not only for your peace of mind, but just because it's probably the best thing to do.
So checking the tax records and if it's for sale, both of those are so that you don't end up getting the reservation taken away from you by new owners or because the house is being foreclosed upon, or that's what you're getting at, right?
Yes, exactly. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
No. Okay. I just want to make sure I understood where you're going. Yeah. So that makes sense. That's something I would have never thought of on my own. So that makes sense. And it's not something I did when I stayed in June, but, okay. So those are some good ideas to research it before you book it. And then, hopefully after you've gathered all the information, you come up with a location that you like. Are there specific, like when you're searching for a house to try to narrow it down, mm-hmm. what kind of criteria are you looking for to get a good location?
Things that I look for are when I look at the pictures, do I like what I see? And that's another question you should probably ask after you've narrowed it down. Are the pictures current? What kind of security do they have if you have a home with a pool? Do they have just the basic stuff or do they do a little bit more? Where are the bathrooms? Where are they located? Do you have people that might not be able to do stairs? Because a lot of the homes are two stories. So that's something to keep in mind is where are the bedrooms and the bathrooms located? Do you have access in the neighborhoods to any other amenities? Some neighborhoods have giant pools with, you know, zero entry pools, something similar to what you might see at Disney World. Some neighborhoods have arcades. Some have theaters. Are those things that you as a renter will have access to? If they're advertising it, it's something you probably want to double check because some neighborhoods, not just because you're renting, doesn't gain you access to those amenities. So double check on those.
And I think you've also mentioned to me that you like to see like the orientation of the house relative to the other neighbors and
yes.
like which way the pool's facing and stuff like that. So, you know, you can get really detailed with some of this stuff. And like when we were there in June, I ended up having two different condos and the first one had lots of good reviews. And so that's kind of when I went off of. But then when I got there, I realized it was overlooking kind of a busy street. So mm-hmm. it was really noisy. And any days that we decided we might want to sleep in were kind of pointless because it was so noisy. But then we moved to the second condo. It was a lot quieter. And I thought, I wish I had kind of looked into that beforehand to know that, you know, before we got there. So I think it's good to look outside of the pictures that they post and see kind of the orientation, which is something I think you do a lot as well.
Yeah. Yes.
All right. So now we've picked a spot that's hopefully, you know, good fit for our family and all that. But there's other things to consider as we plan an offsite stay. One of them is transportation, because if you're staying on site, you have the choice of using all Disney transportation from the time you, you know, get to Orlando to the time you leave. But offsite, that's not the case. So we have to talk about renting a car, which is what most people do, or having their own car if they drive to Florida. As you know, I'm not a big fan of driving. So renting a car was also a new part for me of my offsite trip.
And you have, yeah, like you said, you have to have a car. It's a lot of the neighborhoods, once again, will offer things like shuttles, just like the offsite hotels, but those should never be an option. A car is necessary.
A car is necessary offsite. I'm a big fan of Uber, and I really thought maybe that's what I was going to use, and then that wouldn't have worked out. But so offsite, you really need a car. So let's talk about renting a car first. Some of the tips that you have for renting a car, since I know as much about renting a car in Orlando as I do staying offsite. So what are some of your tips on that?
Just kind of the basics. I like to start with Mouse Savers. They do a great job of compiling discounts that are specific for the Orlando area. So that's usually where I start, is someplace like Mouse Savers. There's other websites that probably do an equally good job. So if you have a favorite, I wouldn't hesitate to go to one of those. And then I go ahead and I set myself a general budget, but then I check back frequently. Just because, just like with their a large supply of houses in Orlando to rent, which keeps prices down, there's also a large supply of rental cars, and the prices fluctuate frequently. So it's not a bad idea to keep checking, and when those prices go down, to rebook and take advantage of those savings.
Yeah, and as a person who doesn't do a lot of car renting, that was a surprise to me. I didn't even know that you could keep checking prices to reduce it. I thought once you booked it, that was the rate you were locked in at. But especially in Orlando, you can keep checking and hopefully get a better deal. There is a service you mentioned to me for checking that, Auto Slash.
Yes.
Which is that's something new you're trying?
Yeah, it's something new. I've gotten a few emails from it, but I've never gone all the way from the booking through the completion. So I've signed up for it, and so far it's done a good job. I've done 2 different reservations. It will track a brand new reservation that originates with them. And then you can also have it track one that you've made on your own, and then you can input your information, and then it'll send you updates. And for both of those, they're doing a good job. I've already saved $63, I believe.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. If I'll have to do that, because I think we'll probably do more of these long trips offsite. So that'll be a good tip to keep the rental car prices down.
And the nice thing is that if they're tracking one that it originates with them, it automatically rebooks. If it's one that you have done on your own, you have to go through the steps. But either way, it's pretty handy.
So I will link to that in the show notes if people want to try that out for their own car rental for their trips. Okay, so once you figure out how you're going to get a car, whether it's your own car or a car that you rent, there are some things to keep in mind as you're driving during your Disney World trip. One, another thing that you taught me, is to get the toll tag.
Yes.
Because all around Orlando are toll roads, and you don't want to get stuck not having the right coins or dollars to use for that. Instead, you can get a toll tag. And I don't know how you got yours. I ended up picking mine up at CVS after I got there. They're available at lots of different places, and I'll link to the website for the Sun Pass. But you can pick them up, and they're portable, and they have suction cups that you can attach them to your window. Did you get yours online, or where did you get yours?
It's been a long time, but I'm pretty sure we ordered ours online.
So,
because we had it when we got to the airport. So yeah, we probably ordered it online.
Yeah. And that's a good thing. Like the way that I did it was after I got there. So I had between the airport and the CVS where I got it, I had to, you know, handle the toll roads on my own and then pick it up. But if you order it ahead of time, you have it right from the get go. And it was super easy to set up. You can do it online, or you can call them and they set up your account. And I just put my debit card on it, and it automatically reloads it as needed. And it was super convenient. So I highly recommend that people are navigating around Orlando to use the SunPass toll tag.
I agree.
Okay. I learned that from you. Would not have known otherwise. Okay. What else? Driving to Disney World. this is something I was stressed out about a lot.
But it wasn't that bad, was it?
It wasn't. So that's what I want to reiterate in case anyone is scared about that. Because, you know, as a person who mostly stays on site, there are so many people everywhere that I sort of thought, oh, that's what the cars will look like too. You know, tons of traffic and like a rush hour traffic situation. I was there for a whole month and never, ever ran into that. And at all different times of day, it was so easy. I was there, it was minutes, no matter what, it was almost always minutes between the time I, you know, left the condo to the time I got to the parking lots. And it was no big deal at all.
Yeah. They make it very easy. They have great signage. GPS on your phones works excellent. It's really, it's something probably that a lot of people stress out about, but you don't need to.
No. And it's just not the sort of like onslaught of cars that I had imagined. It's the on-site experience in some ways is more busy because there's so many people getting on buses and, you know, all going to the same place. But the car situation was super laid back for the most part, except for Magic Kingdom can be a lot trickier than the other parks. But for the most part, it was really easy. And I kind of liked having the freedom to get between two points so much faster than if I was waiting on a bus or something.
Yes.
Gonna have to mark this day in history that I really liked having a car. I never thought I was gonna say that, but I did.
I will never let you forget it.
No. Okay. So navigating is pretty easy. But related to that, though, I want to talk about having an annual pass.
Ah, yes.
So this is definitely something that really occurred to me during offsite stay, because every time you pull up to park on site at Disney World at a park, you have to pay to park. But if you have an annual pass, it's included. And that's why I did that handy graphic that I talked about in a recent podcast, because I really wanted people to understand what the differences were between, like, if you just had regular park tickets and paid for everything a la carte, or if you had an annual pass. So I'll include that graphic in the show notes again. But just to sort of recap, basically, if you have a family or your group of friends or whoever it is, and one of you has an annual pass, you get to use that to park as long as you're all together. You can use the Memory Maker photo downloads that come with it, the Magic Band. You get one Magic Band, and then discounts on different merchandise and food just by having one annual pass for your group.
So, which is, yeah, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal. And I think for offsite people, it's an even bigger deal than onsite just for the parking alone. It's $20 a day. And so it can really pay for itself. If you have a trip of more than, like, say, 5 or 6 days, the annual pass is going to make a lot of sense just for one person to have it at least. So I wanted to just sort of throw that in. Because that really, really occurred to me when I was there. I felt like a VIP flashing my annual pass because I could just get in and not have to worry about, you know, pulling out $20 every time. What else is unique to staying off-site? Groceries.
Groceries, yes.
All right. So on-site, my favorite way to get groceries is Garden Grocer. And it used to be available to use them off-site, but that changed.
Yes, it did. Yeah, that changed. I'm so sad.
Okay, so I'll link to a post I have on the website about different ways to get groceries for your trip. I think it's called 8 Ways to Get Groceries. Garden Grocer happens to be my favorite on the list, but that only works if you're staying on-site because they changed their delivery area. So they don't do off-site anymore. However, you and I, in our everyday lives, are a fan of Walmart grocery pickup. And
yes.
We haven't done it yet in Orlando, but I looked it up, and that's an option. Of course, if you have a car, you can just go shopping if you want. Just, you know, stop by any grocery store. I love Publix, and get your groceries. That's easy. But if you want to save time, if you don't want to, you know, do the sort of domestic things like you might at home, you can do the pickup. I think that's a good option.
I'm definitely trying Walmart in March. We're going to see how it works out there.
And so just to explain, if people haven't tried it before, the way it works is you can order whatever you want on the Walmart grocery website. You pay for it and you pick a pickup time. And then when that time arrives, you can, in your app, say that you're on your way. And in the app, it can track your location. And then when you pull up, they bring your groceries out to you. It's really easy.
It's very easy, but you have to set your delivery day up for the following day. Your pickup time for the following day. So you have to put that order in the day before.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've gotten into a routine the last couple of weeks at my house where if I want to pick up groceries Sunday, I have to remember to order them by Saturday. And so that lets you and I do more work. Because let's be honest, our home lives are not as efficient since we're working on this Disney World stuff. No. But it helps. It helps us at home. And so I definitely would consider it in Orlando because it works so well at home. Why not try it?
Yep.
But anyway, that's really good. Good idea for offsite people. Well, I think all of that is very helpful. I think my next offsite stay is going to go a lot more like this than it did last time. I learned some important lessons. I had a lot of hiccups during my stay, but I should have talked to you beforehand before I booked it. Anyway, so do you have any other thoughts you want to add about staying off site?
No, I mean, just give it a try. It's definitely not the same as staying on site, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean that it's going to be a bad trip. It's still a great way to experience the parks.
Yes, I agree with you. And I would say that it is sort of less magical or in the bubble, but it's also more relaxing in some ways. So yes. It kind of depends both. There's pros and cons to both. And I wouldn't hesitate to try either way.
Good.
Yeah.
Convert.
Yes. Success. I keep trying things and I keep learning things in the process. That's the whole point, right?
Yeah, it is.
All right. Well, thank you, Heather.
You are welcome.
I hope you enjoyed that little conversation that Heather and I had, and that maybe you learned some things if you're considering an off-site stay. If you have tips, feel free to share them on the website in the post that has this episode, or on the Facebook page is another place where people often chime in. When I post the link there, feel free to comment with your own thoughts. Before we wrap it up, I do have a quick tip of the day for you, and that is to be sure to update to the newest version of My Disney Experience. The app has been updated recently to include directional information, and I will say up front that the directions aren't always the best, but it is a new feature that Disney has added, and I think that they will continue to improve it. There have been some bugs, and sometimes the advice is not necessarily what I would do, but I do think it's nice to have that feature in the app if you want to get between any two points, and the two points can be parks, resorts, it can be attractions. Like, I'm at Dumbo, how do I get to Big Thunder Mountain? They have directions at that level as well. So go ahead and update so that you can have the directions. And the easiest way to get directions is to pull up an attraction or a restaurant or something, and then you can click the directions. I think it says directions option, and then it'll help you get there from wherever you are. So go ahead and do that and try it out, and hopefully that will continue to get better with time. I think that will wrap up this episode of WW Prep to Go. For more information on the show, you can go to the website, find the podcast tab at the top, and find episode 130, or check the information in your show notes. Until next time, I'll see you on the site.